I'm Frank Vaughn, and I am coming to you on January 8th, 2025. What a wonderful day it is. Don't read into the background too much, but we are going to discuss today the threat of takeover from the United States from a perspective of what problems would it cause, what problems would it solve, and a cost-benefits ratio and a pro and cons list. We're going to go down the whole thing. But the first thing I want to do is I want to talk about the incoming administrative team, Trump's cabinet picks. And I want to link it to Jagmeet Singh, who I've often said Jagmeet Singh is the most narcissistic, useless politician in Canada. He is worse than Justin Trudeau. He's worse than anybody that you can point a finger at. Because he's hypocritical to a degree that defies even political imagination. He is narcissistic to a degree that challenges Trudeau himself. I don't think there's enough strength of character and depth of character in Jagmeet Singh to even assess him hubris. He's so petty. He's so small. But anyway, let me talk about how incompetent he is. This is the cabinet, the most important picks in the cabinet. And it's a very different cabinet from the first one that Trump put together. This is the team that our non-existent government would have to deal with when Trump brings us, as he says, economically to our knees. All the people virtue signaling online about his incapacity to do so are fools. We have been deconstructing Canada and making ourselves the subject of the United States for decades, since Diefenbaker. We have weakened our national institutions and our structure to the point where we have a prime minister who openly says we are the first post-national state and is proud of that accomplishment. And now all of a sudden you're supposed to awaken nationalism, and most people can't even define what it means to be Canada except for saying, we're not American. And I find that really interesting. We're all supposed to be nationalists now when we've spent the last decade casting aspersions at anybody who had national pride. But I digress for the moment. I want to get this done first. Tulsi Gabbard is a lifelong Democrat. RFK Jr. is a former Democrat. Two people out of, I'm just going to guess off the top of my head, 20 people here, give or take, 10% of the cabinet. RFK Jr., well, first off, Tulsi Gabbard, Director of National Intelligence, which is a pretty significant office, wasn't running for anything. She's now in Trump's cabinet. RFK Jr. was running as an independent. He was polling 3%. He's managed to work that into Secretary of HHS, fairly powerful position, and has a reasonable expectation that both of these people are going to get acclaimed, or what's the word they use down there? Approved? Confirmed. They're going to get confirmed. Jagmeet Singh and his party, which exists to serve the Liberal Party of Canada and provide them votes and keep them in office and support Justin Trudeau and the Liberal Party every step of the way as they've deconstructed this country and left us in an incredibly vulnerable position, so vulnerable that not just the incoming U.S. president, but the entire political elite, incoming establishment, the anti-establishment people that are going to be flipping to the establishment, we'll address that shortly, are making fun of us like we're the butt of a joke. There's no one in the world coming to our defense. That's how weak they have left us. Jagmeet only exists, and his party only exists, to provide political support for this deconstruction of the very idea of Canada. Jag and his party have consistently polled between 15 and 20%. That's a lot of votes. But in giving his support to this coalition government, which they refuse to call a coalition because they, let's face it, politicians, they really don't like to tell the truth. He didn't even negotiate for himself a cabinet position. RFK Jr. had 3% of the vote as an independent with no chance of winning and managed to leverage that into a cabinet position. Tulsi Gabbard wasn't running for anything and managed to leverage her support into a cabinet position. Jag got nothing for his party. They are broke. They're destitute. Their credibility is in shambles. The left in this country, which is divorced from any sense of reality, the 40% of people that still support one of the two parties on the left, when they get a new mannequin, when they get a new smokescreen for a leader, they're probably going to rally back to red because that's all they know how to do. I don't know what it is with these people. They just love the destruction of this country, and they love to pretend that everything is roses. Meanwhile, even though our government's gone home and prorogued, look at this cabinet, and then look at what Trump is going to have to negotiate against. These are the people. Oh, I thought I had a picture of the liberal cabinet up here. My apologies, I got the wrong picture. But I mean, I think you get the idea. Now, before I get into the meat and potatoes of this particular video, I just want to deal with Jason P. from off of X. I don't care who believes this, but Canada was in a much worse position in 2015 when Harper left than it is today. And it only will get worse once PP hands it over to Elon and the convoy chuds. What space cadet drugs are you on, sir? The idea, and I'm not a big fan of Stephen Harper. He brought home a lot of bad policies along with his partner in government, Maxime Bernier, that are now biting us in the butt. But setting that aside, how and in what world could you ever claim that his government left us in a worse state than the outgoing, potentially outgoing government of Justin Trudeau and the Liberals? They have massively increased our national debt like no other government. We have an out-of-control deficit. We got a public sector that's out of control, a bureaucracy that's out of control. We have a border crisis. We have a crime crisis. We have an immigration crisis. We have a housing crisis. And you're claiming that we were worse off under Stephen Harper? Check yourself. It's absurd. And on top of that, Stephen Harper, as much as I think he undermined Canada, and I do, I sincerely believe that, we are now in a state of acute national crisis in the midst of a leadership vacuum because the narcissist in chief sent the government home. And his partner in the NDP was happy to allow it to happen. Trump is going to be inaugurated in 12 days. He can sign those tariff orders and he can cripple Canada and we don't even have a government. We got Doug Ford. We got Elizabeth May. God help us. Elizabeth May. Now the Americans have got a hold of her. Talking about taking California and Oregon and Washington, it's like, with what army? Why would they ever want to leave the United States? Absolutely crazy. And you got Doug Ford talking about buying Alaska. With what money, Doug? How are you even going to enforce it? Do you honestly think the Alaskans want to leave America and become part of Canada? You guys are virtue signaling. You guys are trying to look strong, and you're just making us look worse. Like, you're just adding fuel to the fire. This rallying around Justin Trudeau and rallying around these absurd joke talking points, not taking this seriously, is a huge mistake. Because there is this notion, there is this argument that Trump is just doing this for attention. He's doing this to maximize leverage for an upcoming trade negotiation. And that could be an accurate take. Perfectly could be. But the tone and the level that this discussion has taken before he's in office suggests that there might be more of a pitch of an idea happening. Now, let's just take a precautionary note here for a minute. As the anti-establishment becomes the establishment, so we're talking about people who have been marginalized and targeted by the system, all the way even through the Trump administration and through the Biden administration, because the first Trump administration was just mired. It's amazing they got done what they got done because the level of political opposition was so enormous. And now he's wiser, which is why I think he's talking so tough. He's going to go for it, man. He's got 4 years left. He's going to go for it. And I think he's very serious about many of the things that he's talking about, from Panama to Greenland. If you look at the net result of U.S. foreign policy since the war started in Ukraine, it's almost like the Ukrainian war is a smokescreen for real U.S. ambition, which is to divide Europe from Russia and cut them off from their energy, which is destroying the European economies, at the same time as they are dealing with the consequences of mass immigration. And every government in Europe is talking about remigration all of a sudden. Isn't that crazy? All of us who suggested that it was going too fast and that we were destabilizing our nations, we're all called racist and fools, and now all of a sudden the very people who name-called us are establishing remigration centers in third-party countries. The liberals are talking about letting visas expire and millions of people are going to have to go home from Canada. All of a sudden these things are now mainstream talking points. They flip their script. And just like when they flipped their script about COVID, because at the very beginning when I was covering C-19, the government's message was masks are dangerous. They were saying this. This is Theresa Tam and the government were saying masks are dangerous. Restrictions on foreign flights coming into Canada would be too much of an impact on people's freedom of movement. Doug Ford went out and filmed himself in front of a Chinese buffet and begged people to go spend money at Asian restaurants. And that's what they did. And then they flipped their script, told everybody to do masking, and talked about lockdowns and promoted a dangerous medical experiment. And the public just snip-snapped and went right along with it. Because the vast majority of people like to believe what they're told. And Canada has a crisis of this. Now, what are the problems that Canada faces? There are so many acute issues. It's hard to pick where to start a list. So the country's identity, its very core identity as the post-national state, has been under assault. We could actually call Canada the first experiment in post-nationalism, which means that there is no core identity. Our identity is everybody else's identity, which makes it really hard to build a patriotic case for holding the whole thing together other than the phrase, we're not Americans, which ain't enough. An identity cannot be made of the things you're not. An identity must be made of the things that you are. So setting that aside for a minute, Canada needs a change of direction, and the electorate appears at least smart enough to understand that that's what must be done. If you look at opinion polls when it comes to the Conservatives, and I would still guess that those opinion polls are underestimating Conservative support. I think turnout will be high when we get an election, and I think most of those new voters are going to go to the CPC because they know, most of the public knows, we're in a really bad situation. But let's assume we elect the Conservatives to a very strong government and we have a new prime minister. That's one house, and that's one layer of the legislature. That's the House of Commons. But what do we got? Trudeau broke a principle of honor that has been consistently abided by both Conservatives and Liberals going back through time, which was to not stack the Senate and to not stack the judiciary. Harper didn't do it. Probably the biggest mistake he made, because he was honorable, at least in that regard. When Trudeau came in, he changed that. 85 out of 100, I don't know if that's the precise number. It might be 102. And I don't have it at my fingertips. Doesn't matter. 85 out of 100 senators are Liberal appointees. They're ostensibly called independents, but he deliberately picked the most virulent progressive leftist possible to stack the Senate with, and they get to serve until they're 75. They can oppose the elected government. 7 of our Supreme Court justices were appointed by Justin Trudeau. They are very progressive. They can oppose the mandate and the wants of the elected government. The lower judiciary is infected with progressives. The municipal governments, not just the ones that you elect, but your CAOs and your CFOs, are largely dominated by progressive educated figures, by leftists. That's just the tip of the iceberg. The headwinds that an incoming common sense government is going to have, are going to face, don't just last for 4 years. We're talking 10, 15 years. One of the interesting things, actually there's a few interesting things, going back to the Jordan Peterson interview with Pierre Poilievre. First, quickly, one of the most terrible things that he said was that we have one of the best systems of government on the planet, Westminster parliamentarians. I can't even spit it out. It's so offensive. Canada is so backwards in terms of citizen empowerment. We're such a socialist totalitarian state. We're moving ever closer to that. Prorogation stopped a lot of really bad legislation from actually turning into law and gaining royal assent. But this idea that we should be proud of our government is absurd. There's almost nothing to be proud of because we have no power as people. Whether you're a conservative, whether you're a liberal, a leftist, or you're far right, whatever you are, you have no power to recall your legislators. You have no power to advance ballot initiatives. You cannot promote your own laws. Whether it's at the provincial level or whether it's at the federal level, you are disenfranchised. All you get to do is mark an X for one person at each level every 4 years. And you have no means of demanding accountability. You have to wait for your legislators to give you something. We elect our kings, and they don't even have to face accountability when they break their promises to us. So people talk about Polyev, and they demand that he talk about this, and they demand that he talk about that, and everybody wants him to say more things and do more things. Everybody's got an opinion about what he's not doing. Look at the situation realistically. The entire nation is infected by career bureaucrats that are leftist, by lifetime appointees that are leftist. And Pierre, the thing that I was initially going to say, alluded to the fact that he's going to have to call on the public to remain politically active during his administration, which means applying people pressure to the institutions of bureaucracy, which you might as well include the Senate in, to actually allow his agenda to move forward. I've never heard a politician talk about that, and you would have to do that because without public pressure, without work, without freedom convoy scale work, his agenda is going to die in the Senate and the courts. And there's a lot of good things about the Conservative Party as it's construed right now. So these are all really big problems. And this is before you address trying to open up the Constitution and trying to tweak Confederation. Do you want electoral reform? Would you like an elected Senate? These guys, they, you know, when Trudeau talks about how one of his biggest regrets was not getting electoral reform done, he's talking about changing first past the post in the House of Commons for some kind of proportional representation. We don't need that. And doing that would require opening up the Constitution. We're not going to get it anyway. Because there's vested interests, looking at Quebec, who don't want to ever let it happen, let alone Ontario, the people and the two provinces that rule the rest of this nation. But there's, at the core of it, there's nothing really wrong with first past the post for one of your legislatures. What we desperately need is an elected Senate, a Senate that distributes seats along the same lines as the United States distributes their Senate seats. So it creates equality. It creates representation for the geographic land that people live on. So that a province like Saskatchewan, with its million people, can have a chamber where they have just as much say as a province like Ontario. Believe it or not, folks, that's fair. You have one legislature, first past the post. You have another legislature that represents the land, and then you have an executive, perhaps an elected governor general. It would act like an office of the presidency. You could almost dispense with the prime minister, and you could have each party nominate a candidate for the governor general's office. But all of these things are far distant pipe dreams because there are so many vested interests wrapped up in the corrupt and backwards way that Canada is, who will sacrifice our future to maintain their ability to take advantage of the current federated situation. Whether it's Quebec, whether it's your public sector unions, whether it's, you name it, We have so many headwinds. So you wonder why Pierre Poilievre and the CPC doesn't talk about these big electoral reform ideas. It's because they're so out of reach. Because even if you get them on the table, you're fighting all of this established institutional power. Then you have to convince the provinces to ratify. I just don't see a situation where the country has the political will to do anything brave to bring our nation into the 21st century. It's really sad because I've been dreaming about these things my entire life. I've been thinking about how we can make Canada better, how we can get citizen empowerment, the right of recall, and the ability to propose ballot initiatives and actually get them on the ballot. All of these things, like electoral reform, first past the post to some kind of proportional representation, is like the first step. It's the worst step. But like all the other things I've talked about would come first, Senate reform, Governor General reform, before we get to ballot initiatives. And the first step is impossible. That's why Trudeau didn't do it. He couldn't have got it done because the vested interests in this country won't allow it to be done. There's also the issue of healthcare in Canada. We are one of, I think, 25 nations that deliver universal healthcare, and we do it the worst. It is not a good system. More money won't make it better. Healthcare in Canada is broken and will continue to decline and get worse, especially in the wake of the mass immigration that we have done. We have just created immense burden on the system. The system is clogged. We don't have a focus on preventative healthcare. I don't even want to get into the healthcare problem because we're talking about systemic structural problems in Canada, not within the idea of how Confederation works, but Confederation itself. So let's just set that aside. Sorry, I almost got distracted. Now let's talk about what happens, a pro and cons list of if the United States were to successfully take over Canada. Well, let's go with the cons first. The Americans would have to deal with 80% of the Canadian population becoming Democrats pretty much right away. That's a con for them. It will take 10, 20, 30 years before things normalized. That's a con. We lose the country. You could argue that's a con. You could argue it's not a con. I don't know. The more I think about it, I don't know. Because what is Canada? It's been under attack constantly to the point now where the Americans can actually make the claim that they spend $100 billion or hundreds of billions of dollars a year defending us, and they do. Because when we had a military, they coached us into getting rid of it. Diefenbaker listened, and subsequent generations of parliamentarians adhered to that advice. And Canada's military has grown weaker and weaker and weaker. We can't defend ourselves anymore. We are entirely dependent on the United States and their power to keep the sharks at bay. So when Trump says they spend that money to defend us, they are right, because we've made it that way. We didn't develop our national industries. We didn't protect our manufacturing. We didn't use tariffs and the controls that we have at our borders to make sure that Canada had a strong, independent, resource, fortified, beautiful nation. We gave it away. So we have made ourselves a subject state already to America, to the Chinese. We are at the whims of the world, and India, by the way. That's the new big one that's taken a piece of Canada. What was Canada? Because, again, Canada doesn't have a core national identity, according to our prime minister, and Canada is a post-national state. So we are just made up of all these other national interests anyway. So, I mean, is that a con? Is there even a country left to lose? What's our identity that we're not American? It's a pretty weak case. Now, before I get to the pro list, which is, it's actually extensive. I mean, maybe I'll do that right now. If we are given, whether as independent provinces, each province gets statehood, or the nation is divided up into regions, and they get statehood, I don't think it's a good idea for Canada to become one big state. I think that's terrible. I think Quebec, for instance, would enjoy statehood. because they want to protect their culture. They want to protect their own unique spin on North American culture. Well, with statehood power, they have that much more power to protect themselves because the Constitution is much better to states than the Federation is to provinces. Or at least the Federation does allow for provincial autonomy, but provinces seem to be loath to actually take it and create differences. If you go to the United States, every state has a different flavor. And that's because of the way the Constitution was designed. They've had 250 years of development. So you can go to California, which is a far lefty love land, or you can go to the Midwest and experience real down-to-earth people. It's up to you. Choose your own adventure. That's the beautiful thing about America. Canada's not really that way. But we do still, in the face of that, have very different distinct societies as you cross this nation. You start in Quebec with the socialist French nationalists, and you get out west where you have, I would call, a pure gold of humanity. Beautiful place out here. I don't think it makes sense to have one state. I think you'd have to have multiple states. And statehood would benefit many of the regions because they'd be able to enact their own independent values. You as a citizen would get one of the most powerful passports in the world, arguably the most powerful passport in the world. You would get the most valued citizenship in the world. You would get the Constitution. You would get the First Amendment. You would get the Second Amendment. You get every single amendment. It's very powerful, people. And automatically, all the problems I've listed previously in this video, you don't have to worry about opening up the Constitution anymore. You don't have to worry about trying to alter Confederation. You don't have to worry about the progressive leftist headwinds, because the reforms, upon entering into an agreement with the United States, would automatically be granted to you. So all of these insurmountable problems are all of a sudden overcome. Internally, Canada, since 1982, hasn't been able to overcome any of these problems. And going forward through time, we're not going to be able to overcome these problems because we don't have the political will. We don't have the public will. People talk about things, but most of the time they don't even know what they're talking about. And they don't understand that the vested interests that love the Federation the way it is will never let you have it. If we're incorporated in the United States, we just get it. And that would have to be part of the deal. Full citizenship for every single Canadian. Every single born Canadian should have full citizenship. And if you had it, it's not a bad deal. Because all of a sudden you get a chamber that represents the popular will, Congress. You get a chamber that represents the land, the Senate. You get an executive branch that represents execution. You get a judiciary that you have more ability to have say over. You get ballot initiatives. You get to vote for your sheriffs. You get all these really cool things. And I don't know how it would look. I don't know how the two would merge together and how that whole thing, but there's actually a lot there that's positive. You know, and people might not like me saying that. There's going to be people in the comments that call me a traitor. Look, I'm not saying throw Canada away. I'm just telling you realistically how it works. Now, how would Trump go about it? Right now, in his most recent press conference, he's actually floated the idea of using military force to take Panama, the Panama Canal, and military force to take Greenland. He didn't float the idea. He just didn't rule it out. I should make sure I get that right. And he says he's going to use economic power and leverage to bring Canada to its knees. Because of how we've been governed, I'll say it again, we don't have leverage. Trump doesn't have to troll us to get maximum leverage because we don't have any. If we get in a tit-for-tat war with the United States, their economy might be damaged, but it can absorb the damage. Meanwhile, they can absolutely obliterate our economy. They can destroy our dollar. They can take us to our knees to a point where we beg for a deal. People in this country don't know anything about suffering yet, but they'll learn very quickly if our leaders decide they're going to go toe-to-toe with the Americans. We lose. And because this government has made such a fool of us, because this government has destroyed our reputation on the world stage, there is nobody out there who's going to lift a finger in our defense. And that's the sad truth, especially if the war in Ukraine were to end, if there was some kind of agreement that was come to with China that allowed the United States to have free rein in this hemisphere in return for the Chinese to have rein, or between China and India, to respect their spheres of interest in Southeast Asia and let them figure out the problems of Southeast Asia in their own way and stay out of the Western Hemisphere. If you can mollify the other powers in the world, who's coming to save us? And that's why it's really foolish, the messaging that Elizabeth May and Doug Ford and all of these fools are coming out with. That's why Elon Musk is able to just call our prime minister girl and mock him fully. They have all the cards already. They don't need to meme to get more leverage. They've already got all the leverage. We are so much weaker than we were 4 years ago. Trudeau has really done a number. Probably one of the worst world leaders in the last 100 years. It is incredible. Now, all that being said, there's another dimension to this that's not just economic. It's military in nature. The Americans have it there. They can create what's called a casus belli. That is a justification for war. I would argue they already have it because Canada is a legitimate security threat to the interests of the United States. And they've already hinted at this idea, but I don't think they're talking about it publicly yet because it's the big trump card. Canada has been allowing terrorists to enter the United States because we have a porous border. We know that for a fact. We have recent reports backed by evidence. It's a real thing that's happening, that our universities have been involved in human trafficking into the United States. We have the three largest drug busts in Canadian history occurring recently with links to Mexican cartels being run by Sikh individuals that we have allowed to come into this country unvetted. It's a fact. Enough fentanyl to kill the entire country. And what are they doing with it? They're not just selling it here. They're moving it through our border into the United States. Terrorists, drugs, human smuggling. Legitimate security threats because we don't have a strong border. Now picture a situation where where the Americans just start telling the truth about Canada, how we're governed, and tell the truth about the border and tell the truth about what's come across the border. That's all they have to do. Tell the truth. And all of a sudden they have a casus belli. We're already in a situation where the world will not come to our aid. When the Americans start simply telling the truth about how this nation has been run into the ground, they will create the pretext for a quick and easy military takeover. That's an option. I'm not saying it'll happen. I'm saying that's an option that they have. They just have to tell the truth. They just have to build the case. It builds itself because we have been overrun by these globalist thinkers, this mass immigration mindset, this out-of-control deconstruction known as post-nationalism. Believe it or not, there's an ideology that has been tested here and in Great Britain and to a big extent, but a lesser extent in Europe, that they are now rejecting. It's a failed ideology, but it's the one that can enable the Americans to justify having to take us over for their own security. These are very real possibilities, people. I'm not saying it's going to happen. I'm just telling you the possibilities. And what would we do? I love people who post memes of lumberjacks kicking Trump like the 300. We don't have any arms. The government's doing everything they can to take away what hunting rifles we have left. We don't have a right to bear arms. We don't even have a right to self-defense. You people are talking about revolt and resistance. You can't even defend your own home without being dragged through the runner. You're going to get arrested. Someone comes into your house and tries to kill your kids and you stop them, you're going to get charged. And then you're going to have to go to court and justify protecting your own family. That's Canada. And you want to talk about armed resistance? Now, mind you, there would be some political headwinds, but there's going to be no armed resistance. Our military cannot fight off American might. It's been so gutted and weakened. It would be foolish for our troops to obey an order to give armed resistance to the Americans because they'd all be wiped out. Especially considering how we've outsourced our defense to the Americans for decades. The problem that this, one of the biggest problems this country has is that the vast majority of people out there are completely delusional. They have an idea of Canada. They have an idea of this nation that is unreal. It exists in unreality. It has no factual basis. The nation is undermined. The things that you think we are, the things that you think we haven't had for a long time. The power is with the Americans. And I guess that makes me a traitor. I'm just telling you the truth. I'm telling you, an American citizenship is a powerful device. And if they actually went forward and did what they're talking about, in the long term, it probably works out better for us. Because here's the other thing. Canada is heading for a constitutional crisis, even if the Americans stay out. We cut a trade deal and this all goes away and nothing happens. The separatists in Quebec are again going to be the leaders of the opposition. Separatism, which was dead, has been resurrected and is stronger than it ever has been before. The Parti Québécois is going to rule provincially. The Bloc Québécois is going to rule federally for the province. And they're going to be able to bring forward anything they want to say in Parliament. There has always been a nascent Western separatism. It's come and gone, and it's gone through phases. It just hasn't had the leadership to actually get the job done. The rest of the country, the eastern part of this country, has been robbing the West for decades, and they're robbing us again in 2025 and 26 through equalization. They oppose the energy development. They don't want us to be rich. They don't want us to be prosperous. They want to take what we have. They want to harvest our wealth. But they don't want to let us develop further. It's such an abusive relationship. Now, here's the issue. If the West decided to have a genuine separatist movement, if we really started promoting it and it started gaining strength, you can bet your biscuit, you can bet your last dollar, the Americans aren't going to sit idly by. You might find the CIA is operating on Canadian soil in short order. We're in a real bind here, folks. The country is going to go into a separatist crisis. There may be another referendum quicker than you think on Quebec separation. I don't think they really want to leave because they like taking advantage of Canada. But if they read the writing on the wall that Canada is walking towards disillusion anyway, then they might decide to pull the trigger and go. Will the Americans let them go? I don't know. People really need to understand, more than anything, that Canada is in a period of greater crisis. Let me rephrase that. Other nations in the history of the world have faced this level of crisis and have sundered. I talked about Czechoslovakia. I talked about the Anschluss in Austria. I could go through the end of many nations. I could go through the end of the French republics. I can literally talk about this stuff all day. I am very familiar with historical precedent. And I'm telling you right now that Canada is in such a position where it can disappear quicker than you think. So rather than memeing, rather than talking about resistance, which would not materialize, rather than just shrugging your shoulders and dismissing the threat, what I would ask you to do is the same thing I asked you to do 4 years ago when it came to the impending things that were coming with C-19. I warned the public about how the government would flip their script, how they would use it as a justification for powers, how they would promote a medical experiment that you should stay away from at all cost. And that advice aged really well. I'm telling you now to be realistic and to be resilient, to plan ahead. Plan for a world where the dollar hyperinflates into nothing, because that might be the response to tariffs destroying our economy. The government might want to turn on the money printers in a way they've never done before and absolutely destroy the Canadian dollar. The level of destruction that could be wrought in the next several months to a year or two is almost beyond comprehension. And there's so many possible outcomes that it's almost worth another video just to discuss all the different ways that this could play out. None of them are good for the Federation. None of them are good for the Federation. Canada is on the ropes, and I'm here to warn you so that you can get ready. There's going to be people, most of the people in this country, who will hold on to their precious delusions until it's all gone. You, the viewer, have an opportunity to be smarter than them and to be prepared, to be resilient. And how you do that, well, I guess that's up to you. I don't think going forward into the next quarter, two quarters, I'm not sure I'd be holding too many Canadian dollars. I'd be trying to get into things that will hold their value in a hyperinflationary cycle. I would be considering some of the imports that we get from the United States, whether it's food, whether it's sundries, maybe building up a stockpile. Things are okay right now. You think prices are high now. You wait. It only gets worse. Start building your resilience. Don't buy into the fantasy. Be realistic about the threat that we're facing. Czechoslovakians who transitioned from 1936 into 1937 and through 1938, there were probably many of them that didn't see the nation disappearing. But then bigger powers than them came in and carved them up and didn't even give them a say in their destiny. And their country was given away. Canada's in that boat. And you can blame me if you want for saying it. But what you should be doing is looking at Justin Trudeau and Jagmeet Singh for putting us in this position. They mocked Donald Trump. They talk trash about Donald Trump. They talk trash about all these people. They shoot, even now, Doug Ford and Elizabeth May, they talk this big game. They got no power. They have no ammo. They've got nothing. They're like a little kid who's mouthing off to a 6'8" giant. That's the situation. They left Canada. Don't blame me for that. I'm Frank Vaughn. I'll see you in the next one. Did you know that I have a website, frankvaughn.ca, the ultimate repository for all of my work, and a backup location just in case the censors come for me again? And if you like the content, please consider using the donate link in one of the options available. There are no paywalls, there is no advertising, and there is no Patreon, and I intend to keep it that way. Thank you for your time and your consideration.